skip ahead about 40 seconds or so if the resources I've been giving bother you. There is a crisis text line set up for those suffering from anxiety or depression. Text 741-741 for help. If you are experiencing suicidal thoughts, please call the National Suicide Hotline at 1-800-273-TALK or 8255. If you are suffering from domestic violence, please call 1-800-799-SAFE or 7233 or dial 911. The Trevor Project has a hotline for young LGBTQ people who are struggling. Call 1-866-488-7386. Remember, you are not alone. I'll have international resources as well as these U.S. numbers in today's show notes. Southern Fried True Crime covers cases that are not suitable for young listeners, and there may also be some explicit language used. Listener discretion is advised. We count on doctors and nurses to take care of us. We believe they want to heal us, that they truly care about us. We don't like to think of the position of power they hold over us, but they do. And usually, when we acknowledge that power, we believe it is because they can save our lives. We rarely think of caregivers with malicious intent. Even though we are well aware of all of the criminal Angel of Mercy cases, they are called Angels of Death. It is usually nurses, though not always. And some truly believe they are ending someone's suffering, someone's misery. And there is also the attention seeker type, the one who causes a patient to suddenly code, only to be right on hand, the first person there to save the patient's life. They are addicted to the adulation of being a lifesaver. And then there is the third type of angel of death, the sadist, who enjoys taking a life rather than saving it. They enjoy inflicting pain. They use their power for evil, and maybe it is because they feel no power in their own lives. Maybe it's because they resent their patient or their workplace. And maybe it's just because they are a monster. Welcome to episode 105, Angel of Death, Kimberly Sines. Kimberly Clark Fowler was born on November 3rd, 1973 in Angelina County, Texas, to 21-year-old Kent and 17-year-old Benny. Her younger brother William, who went by his middle name Cody, was born exactly 3 years after her. Kim grew up in a working-class family in Lufkin, Texas. Lufkin is about 120 miles northeast of Houston and 180 miles southeast of Dallas. The population is about 35,000 and hasn't changed much since Kim Sines' time there. Lufkin was founded in 1884 by Abraham P. Lufkin, a cotton merchant and Galveston City councilman. Lufkin originally served as a stop on the Houston East and West Texas Railway. It was officially incorporated in 1890. Being close to the railroad and lumber industry, the town grew fairly quickly. Lufkin is located in Deep East Texas, a region similar in culture to East Texas, but deep in the forests and closer to the Gulf Coast. Also known as Piney Woods or the Big Thicket, it became a refuge for criminals and others fleeing the United States, a perfect hiding spot among the pine tree thickets. East Texas is considered by some to be the westernmost extension of the Deep South, with the culture reflecting European Americans and African Americans. Many slave owners began fleeing to this last western outpost where slavery was legal during the Civil War, especially after New Orleans fell under Union control. Slave owners brought some 150,000 enslaved black people with them as the Union Army overtook their home states. Even the accent of Deep East Texas is a drawl, more similar to most southern accents, and not as twangy as the rest of the state. East Texans are also predominantly Protestant Christians, though Catholicism still had an influence, particularly in more recent times with the increased Hispanic population. Kim Fowler's parents were members of the Clawson Assembly of God Church and tried to raise their children with the values of their church and hard work. Kent Fowler worked at Rush Truck Center and his wife Benny at Walmart. But despite their efforts, both Kim and Cody were not into church, and both would go on to have criminal records. When she was young, Kim was good at sports, particularly softball. She was also a cheerleader in the eighth grade, but by her sophomore year in high school, she showed little interest in anything. Teachers noted that she didn't really put in an effort to excel, and she didn't work as hard as other students with her schoolwork either. But she did participate in university interscholastic league events briefly. She sounds like the type of student who doesn't have to try hard to pass. Good grades come easily. But if she had applied herself, she really could have been an excellent student. Her peers described Kim as overly quiet, even morose. A kind of mousy girl with acne who they said really didn't fit in. But in 1990, Kim's life changed. When she was a sophomore at Central High, she started dating a popular senior named Chris Hopper. Chris was voted most likely to succeed and was a star basketball and baseball player. You might think that would have inspired Kim to try harder, but actually, after he graduated in 1990, she dropped all of her extracurricular activities and focused all of her attention on Chris. He became her world. In her junior year, Kim got pregnant and gave birth to son Jacob Hopper on July 26, 1991. The rumor around Central High was that Kim got pregnant on purpose to trap Chris into being with her. According to author John Foxjohn, Kim thought Chris was Mr. Right, while everyone around them saw her as Miss Wrong. She got married during her senior year on September 9, 1991. Chris was 19 and Kim was 17. The marriage lasted just 6 years, with the Hoppers divorcing in September of 1997. After her divorce, Kim started working for Fleetwood Transportation Services in Diboll, Texas, about 15 minutes from Lufkin. In early September of 1999, Kim was rushed to a Lufkin hospital with pneumonia. She was so gravely ill that the Lufkin hospital transferred her to a Houston hospital for treatment. Friends and family said this was a near-death experience, and soon after, Kim became a Christian. Kim met and started dating a coworker at Fleetwood named Kevin Sines. Kevin had a couple of felonies under his belt, including being caught with over 5 pounds of marijuana. He was charged with intent to sell and spent a year in prison before being paroled into Angelina County in 1998. If Kim knew about his past, she didn't care. She was 6 months pregnant with his child when they married on June 10, 2000. 2 weeks later, Kim quit Fleetwood Transportation and her daughter Madison was born on December 22, 2000. In 2002, Kimberly enrolled in Angelina Community College's nursing program. She graduated in December 2004 as a licensed vocational nurse. A licensed vocational nurse, or LVN, is the equivalent of an LPN, or licensed practical nurse. The LVN title is only used in Texas and California. LVNs work under registered nurses and doctors, providing basic bedside care to patients. LVNs can check vital signs, administer medications, start IVs, and dress wounds. Kim went to work at Memorial Hospital in Lufkin after she graduated. She only lasted there 5 months. After Memorial, she moved to the only other hospital in Lufkin, Woodland Heights. Just 2 months into her employment at Woodland, in August of 2005, Kim was fired for stealing Demerol. According to Killer Nurse by John Foxjohn, quote, records also indicated that she supposedly gave Demerol to patients who were not in pain. Kim quickly began searching for a new job, and there were no infractions on her LVN license because the Texas State Board of Nursing hadn't yet investigated the Demerol theft at Woodland Heights. I'm going to pause now for a short commercial break. In Texas, infractions aren't listed on a nurse's license until the charges are investigated. Also, like in many states, when a future employer calls for a reference and to check job history, the former employer is not allowed to explain why the employee was fired. They can only say how long the employee worked for them and whether or not they would rehire that employee. This creates a hole for people like Kim to slip through if the state board is falling behind on investigations. Depending on how well a person does in an interview, and also depending on how fast a new employer needs to fill a spot, a short-term employment at the person's previous job might not be that big of a deal. When you consider that kind of loophole, it doesn't seem all that strange that Kim was rehired quickly at Right Choice Home Health. In the beginning, Kim's new employers found her to be pleasant, punctual, and thought she seemed to enjoy the job. But it didn't take long for her supervisors to notice a change in attitude. She seemed morose and began coming in late or not showing up at all. Right Choice terminated Kim fairly quickly after this. And for someone who didn't seem to really like her job, she took losing it pretty hard. Kevin said Kim became extremely depressed and couldn't get out of bed. He took her to Brentwood Hospital in Shreveport, Louisiana for treatment. Kim was admitted for depression and suicidal thoughts. When she got out of Brentwood, Kim applied to work at Lufkin State School. It was a state living facility for people with developmental and mental disabilities. She started on October 1st, 2006. It was her fourth job in little over a year, and she only lasted there for a month. She was fired on October 31st because she was, quote, not suited for her assigned position. Within a month, Kim got another job at the Children's Clinic in Lufkin. After a little over 4 months of employment in March of 2007, Kim was written up for missing 8.5 days of work. She didn't even call when she missed work. And by May 29th, she was fired. She tried to apply for unemployment but was denied. Her lack of employment was based on her job performance, not being laid off. The Sines marriage was beginning to crumble under the pressure. It wasn't just Kim's work and mental health issues. They had financial issues. Chris, Kim's first husband, had not been paying child support all these years. And though he did start paying in early 2006, Kim was being sued by two different financial institutions by late 2006. After Kim lost her job at the Children's Clinic in March of 2007, tensions boiled over, and on June 7th, 2007, Kevin and Kim got into a heated argument. As he tried to leave for his mother's house, Kim chased after him and Kevin was injured. It's unclear how exactly he was injured, but the police were called and Kim was arrested for public intoxication, criminal trespassing, and misdemeanor assault. Kevin even got an order of protection against his wife, and yet between June and August of 2007, the couple reconciled. Despite Kim's extremely spotty employment history, she still had not been investigated for the Demerol theft allegation at Woodland Heights, so her license was technically clear. And she was hired by DaVita Lufkin Dialysis Center in August of 2007. Again, it seems like a strange situation. You would think her employment history would be a red flag, but DaVita hired her and put her in a 10-week training course. Kim was really excited and told Kevin her new job was a godsend. An estimated 37 million, or 15% of adults in the United States, suffer from chronic kidney failure or end-stage renal disease. Diabetes, high blood pressure, and heart disease are all risk factors for chronic kidney disease, which puts patients at risk for strokes, heart failure, and a host of other problems. Severe kidney damage is treated by dialysis. People need dialysis when they develop end-stage kidney failure. That means 85 to 90% of their kidney function is gone. A patient is hooked up to a machine which removes toxins from their blood before pumping it back into their body intravenously. Dialysis treatment lasts around 4 hours, and the common course of treatment is about 3 times a week. However, every patient is different. The amount of time spent on dialysis treatment depends on several factors. So DaVita is a good alternative for different types of patients with kidney disease. They don't have to check into the hospital or pay for home health dialysis. People with kidney disease who do not get transplants will undergo dialysis for the rest of their lives. Their average life expectancy is 5 to 10 years. But some patients have lived up to 30 years on dialysis. DaVita clinics have treated more than 200,000 dialysis patients in 10 countries. Before Kim Sines began working at the DaVita clinic in Lufkin, paramedics were rarely called. Later in trial, it would come out that there had only been 2 calls in about 15 months before Kim began working there. And the problem started on the 1st of April, 2008. 77-year-old Clara Strange and 68-year-old Thelma Metcalf both suffered cardiac arrest at DaVita and died later that day. Kim was not Clara's patient care technician that day, and Clara had suffered from shortness of breath. She was given oxygen and seemed fine after a few hours. But when her tech, a man named Whirlin, went on break, Kim watched over Clara for him. When Whirlin came back from break, he found Clara unresponsive. Paramedics transferred her to the hospital, but were never able to revive her. Kim had noted on Clara's chart that she had lowered her blood flow rate from 400 to 300. Whirlin later said that nothing in Clara's chart warranted lowering her blood flow rate. Lowering a patient's blood flow rate can disable the alarm on the dialysis machine. Whirlin would later testify that when he told Kim what had happened to Clara, she, quote, didn't really care. The machine was later tested, and the dialysis lines tested positive for bleach. Now, a bleach solution is used to clean the lines of a dialysis machine, but the lines are fully flushed before being transferred to another patient. And while Clara's blood was not tested for biomarkers of chlorine or bleach exposure, heart failure can be caused by an injection of bleach. Clara Strange had been a widowed mother and grandmother who loved to quilt and cook and was an active member of her church, Lancewood First Baptist. Her funeral was held there on April 8th. The other patient who died the same day as Clara was Thelma Metcalf, and Kim was her tech that day. And around 30 minutes after Clara was found unresponsive, so was 68-year-old Thelma. She wasn't breathing and had no pulse. Kim started performing CPR, and another tech named Corey was helping her. But he took over when he noticed that she wasn't performing CPR correctly. Later, yet another DaVita employee, a nurse named Dale, said that he actually performed CPR on Thelma and Kim wasn't even around. Regardless, Thelma Metcalf was also transported to the hospital, but never revived. On Thelma's chart, Kim noted that she had lowered her blood flow rate from 300 to 200, but this time it was warranted because her blood pressure was near the maximum limit. However, the dialysis lines on the machine Thelma was hooked to also tested positive for bleach. 68-year-old Thelma Metcalf was a beloved wife, mother, grandmother, and great-grandmother. Her funeral was also held on April 6th at the church where she was a devoted member, the Shady Chapel United Methodist Church in Zavala, Texas. At the time, Thelma's blood was not tested for bleach or a chlorine mixture. A little over 2 weeks later, on April 16th, another patient died. A patient care technician named Sharon Dearman was Garland Kelly's tech that day, but Kim was his assigned nurse to administer medication. Hours into his dialysis, Sharon heard the alarm on his machine go off. She rushed to his bed, only to find Kim standing there, motionless, next to her unresponsive patient. When Kim saw Sharon, she said she was going to turn off the alarm and reset it. Sharon said no, they needed to start CPR. She started CPR on Garland and told Kim to go get help. Garland Kelly was revived, but never regained consciousness. He died months later on August 15, 2008. Sharon would later testify that she saw a large black clot in the arterial chamber of Garland's dialysis machine. His machine also tested positive for bleach, as did the syringe attached to the line. And his blood was tested, and he was positive for the biomarker indicating chlorine exposure. Garland Kelly was only 59 years old and had been married to his wife, LaFrances, for almost 40 years. His funeral was held at the New Zion Baptist Church on August 23rd. On the same day that Garland coded, a woman named Graciela Castaneda lost consciousness. Paramedics don't remember anything blocking her airway, but the hospital noted that she had choked on chewing gum. Graciela was diagnosed with pneumonia. She later admitted at trial that she had already had pneumonia before coming to DaVita, and her dialysis line tested inconclusive for bleach, but her blood tested positive for the biomarker, and she had an elevated LDH level. LDH is an enzyme caused by hemolysis, and hemolysis can occur when bleach contacts blood. Hemolysis is the rupture or destruction in red blood cells. Graciela lived, but she suffered from memory loss and began having to use oxygen regularly. Less than a week later, on April 22nd, a 64-year-old woman named Cora Bryant was having issues with her blood clotting, so her dialysis lines had to be replaced by her technician, a woman named Martha. And then Martha went on break. Cora's alarm went off, which means the blood stops flowing to the patient, and another tech named Candace Lackey watched as Kim tried to reset the machine. She said that Cora was in stable condition and watching TV. But when she went over to help reset the machine, when she did, she said Cora asked suddenly, "What are you giving me?" And then she went into cardiac arrest. She was transported to the hospital and revived, but later died on July 15th, 3 months later. Her dialysis lines tested negative for bleach, but her blood tested for the biomarker, and she had elevated levels of LDH. In fact, the levels were 20 to 27 times higher than they would naturally be produced by a patient who suffered from cardiac arrest. 64-year-old Cora was from San Augustine, Texas, and her funeral was held on July 21st at First Missionary Baptist Church. The day after Cora suffered cardiac arrest, on April 23rd, Kim gave medication called Zemplar to a woman named Marie Bradley. Later that day, Marie suffered a severe drop in blood pressure. She was taken to the hospital and didn't wake up for 3 days. When she did, she had no memory of what happened at the clinic. Not only did her dialysis line test positive for bleach, so did the syringe Kim used to administer the Zemplar. Marie's blood tested positive for the biomarker, and she also had elevated levels of LDH. 3 days later, on April 26th, 91-year-old Opal Few was being taken care of by a tech named Donna. Less than 30 minutes into her dialysis, her alarm went off. Donna rushed over to find her unresponsive. She was in cardiac arrest and died later that day. Donna later said she didn't see Kim around her patient, but a nurse named Sharon Smith would later testify that she saw Kim Sines give Opal an injection. However, after Opal was taken away by paramedics, Sharon looked and saw that the medication was not recorded in Opal's chart. She confronted Kim about the chart, and Kim said she had given Opal her Zemplar medication but forgot to note it in the chart. Sharon instructed Kim to fix the chart, and she did, writing down the time of 9:05 a.m. But on another patient's chart, Kim recorded that she removed a dialysis line at 9 a.m. It takes longer than 5 minutes to remove the lines. Now, you could say that Kim was guessing the time when she updated the chart as asked, but Opal's dialysis lines tested positive for bleach, as did a syringe found in the Sharps container labeled with her name on it. Her blood was not tested, though. 91-year-old Opal Few was also a devoted mother, grandmother, and great-grandmother. Her funeral was on April 28th. On the same day that Opal coded and died, Kim was assigned to give medication to a woman named Deborah Oates. A few hours later, Deborah complained of a strange taste in her mouth and then had a drop in blood pressure, chest pain, trouble breathing, and said it felt like her bones were being crushed. She was vomiting and her port site wouldn't stop bleeding. Deborah went to the hospital where she stayed for a few days and she did survive. Her dialysis lines were not tested, but her blood tested positive for the biomarker and she also had elevated levels of LDH. I told you earlier that before Kim's signs began at the DaVita clinic, that paramedics had only been called twice in 15 months. In 1 month, paramedics were called to the DaVita clinic 8 times that I have discussed, twice in 1 day on 2 occasions. There had been 5 deaths, 2 near deaths, and Kim Sines was either assigned to or seen near all of these patients. I'm going to pause now to hear a word from today's sponsor. I love discovering new podcasts as much as I love catching up on those I've always wanted to listen to. Luminary has so many to choose from. Luminary is a subscription podcast network with original shows you won't find anywhere else. Like their new show, Murder on the Towpath. I'm so excited to dive into this new crime miniseries, hosted by award-winning journalist Soledad O'Brien. Murder on the Towpath explores the 1964 murder of Mary Pinchot Meyer in Georgetown, D.C. With ties to some of the most powerful men in the country, Mary's death and the trial for her murder shocked the country and became a time capsule for the racial tension, scandal, and distrust of the 1960s. Listen to Murder on the Towpath. Only on Luminary. Go to luminary.link/towpath and get a 7-day free trial of Luminary's original podcasts. That's luminary.link/towpath. Cancel anytime. Terms apply. Obviously, 2 paramedic calls in 1 day would raise suspicion, especially since both patients died. Clara Strange and Thelma Metcalf died on April 1, 2008. On April 2nd, clinical coordinator Amy Clinton went to the Lufkin Clinic to look into the incidents. While she was there, Amy Clinton instituted several policy changes meant to minimize risk and protect against another death at the clinic. She reassigned nurses to different tasks, with some nurses exclusively administering medicine, rather than any patient care tech. Other techs and nurses were assigned to clean up and monitor the clinic. Clinton also switched over to single-use filters in the dialysis machines, as well as individual monitors. On April 28th, the day Deborah Oates became ill, Clinton told Kim she would work as a patient care tech that day. Kim usually administered medicine and was pissed because she thought the assignment was beneath her. But she did sometimes work as a tech. She had been the tech for Thelma Metcalf, who died on April 1st. Other employees saw Kim in tears, and Clinton later testified she could tell she was upset. And evidently, Kim Sines was out for revenge. 2 patients, Marva Roan and Carolyn Reisinger, became sick. Marva's blood pressure bottomed out, and Carolyn had started flopping around in her chair and saying she was hot. Neither woman went to the hospital, but Marva's blood later tested positive for the biomarker, and she had elevated levels of LDH and potassium. However, 2 other patients had witnessed Kim Sines make a bleach solution, pour it into a bucket on the floor, and then draw the solution into a syringe. Both patients, a Ms. Hamilton and Ms. Hall, saw Kim inject Marva and Carolyn. Kim was now losing control and not hiding her actions well. Ms. Hamilton called Amy Clinton over and told her what she and Ms. Hall had seen Kim do. She told Clinton, quote, "I'm a little nervous right now, and I'm worried because she's assigned to me." Both Ms. Hall and Ms. Hamilton had said that Kim looked nervous. Amy Clinton immediately confronted Kim about what the patient saw, and Kim denied injecting any patients. She said she was cleaning the lines of vacant dialysis machines with a bleach solution and only used a syringe to get a precise measurement. Clinton sent Amy home and then took the Sharps container and tested the syringes for bleach. She used the testing strips that are used to check dialysis machines for bleach residue. When three syringes tested positive for bleach, Amy Clinton called her DaVita supervisors, the CDC, and the Texas Department of Health. A mandatory meeting was called the next day for all employees. Everyone attended except for Kim. When a coworker named Worland called Kim to ask her where she was, Kim said she was at her daughter's field day. Worland told Kim she would be fired if she didn't come to the meeting and reported that Kim just said, "Okay." After the meeting, Worland went to go check on Kim. He said she was uncharacteristically unkempt and acted like she didn't know him at first. Then she started crying and said, quote, "I didn't kill those people." Worland was surprised. No one had yet been accused of killing anyone. He also said Kim seemed like she had lost all hope in the world. No shit. She knew she was caught. Kim Sines was fired that same day on April 29th, and the Lufkin DaVita Clinic was shut down for investigations. 2 weeks later, they issued an official statement that read, quote, "We believe the events that led to our voluntary closing the Lufkin Dialysis Center were the result of a criminal act by an individual who has been terminated and is no longer working at the center." The center didn't reopen until July 2, 2008. During the investigation, it was revealed that a fire official sent an anonymous letter to the health department. It stated, quote, "In the last 2 weeks, we have transported 16 patients. This seems a little abnormal and disturbing to my med crews. Could these calls be investigated by you?" It was found that paramedics had actually been called to the clinic around 30 times in April alone, and I only talked about 8 incidents. Some sources say that Amy Clinton didn't go to the clinic until after the letter was sent. But Clinton insisted she went to the clinic on April 2nd, the day after the first two deaths. And this actually makes more sense. As we'll learn later, medical waste was disposed of after 2 weeks. So how would they have had all the testing on the syringes, machines, and patients' blood from April 1st? What is really odd is that it took until April 28th to confront Kim Sines and April 29th to have a mandatory staff meeting. Kim Sines was brought in on April 28th for questioning by Lufkin police the day she was fired. She was reported to have made disjointed statements and could not stay focused. She said she was upset that two patients had accused her of giving other patients medication that was not ordered. She told the police she was scared to go to work and did everything by the book. When asked if she had given any medication to patients on April 28th, she claimed she only gave saline to Marva Roan because she was cramping. Police asked Kim what she thought was going on at DaVita, and Kim was the first person to mention bleach as a possible cause of injury or death. She said she questioned the bleach loop because the machines were hooked up and, quote, "they have some bleach in them." They also asked her how the bleaching procedure worked, and she said they used medicine cups to measure the bleach, but when asked, she admitted that she had used a syringe, but only because she couldn't find any medicine cups. And she did admit to using a syringe on April 28th. She told police the monitors made her nervous. So she, quote, "wanted to ensure that she was precisely following procedures." She said, quote, "I just have a habit of pushing the bleach because I don't know when it was last done and I don't want to kill my patients." FDA investigators investigated the blood tubing, IV bags, and syringes used by DaVita patients. They found that some samples tested positive for bleach. Finding bleach at a dialysis clinic is not rare. A water-diluted bleach solution is used to wipe down chair surfaces and equipment surfaces. The machines are internally cleaned with the bleach solution once a week. But after bleach is used, chemical reactive agents then are used to confirm bleach residue was removed and the cleaned areas are safe. The state health department found that there were dozens of adverse occurrences, meaning, quote, incomplete and undated entries on logs required to document disinfecting procedures. Kim's home computers were searched. The police took two laptops and two desktop computers from her house and her parents' house. It was found that on April 2, 2008, at around 4:15 a.m., Kim had searched Yahoo for bleach poisoning. That would be the morning after the first two victims died. On May 3, 2008, at around 7 p.m., Kim used Yahoo again to search for bleach given during analysis, and can bleach be detected in dialysis lines, and dialysis patient's symptoms of bleach infusion. This was just 5 days after she was questioned by police. On May 30, 2008, 34-year-old Kim Sines was arrested. She was charged with two counts of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon for the two April 28th bleach injections. Her bail was set at $200,000 and she was soon out on bail as the investigation continued. It took a year to gather enough evidence to indict Kim Sines for one count of capital murder of multiple persons and five counts of aggravated assault. She was charged on April 1, 2009, a year to the day of the deaths of Clara and Thelma. The capital murder charge stated that Kim Sines killed at least five of the victims who died in the month of April in 2008. Clara Strange, Thelma Metcalf, Opal Few, Garland Kelly, and Cora Bryant. The aggravated assault charges were for the patients Marva Roan, Carolyn Reisinger, Deborah Oates, Graciela Castaneda, and Marie Bradley. On April 2, 2009, Kim turned herself into the police, and on April 9th, she was released on a $500,000 bond as she awaited trial. Her trial began in March of 2012. The prosecution said she had killed five patients at DaVita by injecting bleach into their dialysis lines in April of 2008. Every one of these patients had direct contact with Kim Sines. Kim's defense team claimed she had no motive to kill. They said she was, quote, a good nurse, a compassionate, caring individual who assisted her patients and was well-liked. They also claimed that Kim was a scapegoat for clinic mistakes and policy violations, including improper water purification. Her attorney suggested that the DaVita clinic officials fabricated evidence against Kim. They also insinuated that bleach may not have been the cause of injury or death to the patients. Chest pain and cardiac arrest are, quote, not specific for bleach infusion. Kim did not testify in her own defense. Her interview with police and testimony before a grand jury was played for jurors. Kim acted defensive in the recordings, claiming she was being railroaded by DaVita. She had claimed that her internet searches about bleach poisoning were because she herself was worried and wondering if that was what was happening to patients at the clinic. 59 people testified at the trial. Candace Lackey, who had witnessed Kim Sines trying to reset patient Cora Bryant's machine, testified. Remember, Cora wasn't even Kim's patient, and Candace was the only one who actually reset her machine. Candace testified that Kim didn't like her job and made no bones about it. She also said that Kim didn't like some of the patients, and all of the patients that she disliked had medical emergencies or died. DaVita employees testified that the clinic's policy on cleaning equipment was to use measuring cups to measure the correct amount of bleach, never syringes. Two employees did testify that it was common to use syringes to measure bleach, but their testimonies were far outweighed by the employees who said syringes were never used for this. A physician and toxicology expert for the CDC testified that each victim died from the injection of bleach into their dialysis port. He testified that it was impossible to measure the amount of bleach in a person's blood because the bleach reacts too quickly, converting to hypochlorous acid, which damages the patient's organs and tissues. Another specialist testified that in his 12 years as a nephrologist, he only had two patients die while undergoing dialysis. He testified that a recent study found that the chance of having cardiac arrest while going through dialysis was very rare, a 0.007% chance. An expert witness testified that a person can reduce the likelihood of the dialysis machine alarming by turning down the patient blood flow rate. Three of the patients who died had their blood flow rates lowered by chem signs. In total, there were 17 days of testimony, 59 witnesses, and almost 400 exhibits. On March 30, 2012, after the jury deliberated for 14 hours, they found Kim Sines guilty of three counts of aggravated assault against Marva Roan, Deborah Oates, and Marie Bradley, and not guilty on two counts of aggravated assault against Karen Reisinger and Graciela Castaneda. They found her guilty of capital murder, meaning they agreed that she was guilty of killing at least two of the five victims. When the judge read the verdict, Kim Sines gasped. Reporters noted that her father buried his face in his hands. On April 2, 2012, now 4 years almost to the day of Kim's first murders, the jury deliberated for 45 minutes on whether or not she should get the death penalty. They spared her life because they felt she did not present a future danger for violence. That's interesting, because in the time that she was out on bond, she did apply for a nursing position. She just didn't get it. Instead, Kim Sines was sentenced to life in prison with no possibility of parole, as well as 20 years for each count of aggravated assault, 60 years in total. The angel of death was given the mercy she did not show her patients. Kim Sines is currently incarcerated at Mountain View Prison in Gatesville, Texas. The DA believed there were more victims than just the 10 indicted cases, based on CDC research. But Lufkin police detectives could only obtain medical waste from 2 weeks prior to April 28, 2008, so there was inadequate evidence for further indictments. And remember, paramedics actually reported responding to calls 30 times in that April of 2008, even though Kim was only connected to 10 cases. It's hard to imagine why Kim Sines would do what she did. Her defense said she had no motive, and I agree. She had nothing to gain. It wasn't for revenge. It was pure malice. She is a true sadist. She likes the control she has over victims. Thelma Metcalf's daughter told Kim in her victim impact statement, quote, "You are nothing more than a psychopathic serial killer. I hope you burn in hell." Women are rarely thought of as vicious serial killers. Kim Sines is the perfect example of a poisoner using a so-called woman's weapon. Even though there are plenty of male angels of death in history, you don't have to be a man to kill helpless patients. You just have to know how to use a syringe. Southern Fried True Crime is written and produced by me, Erica Kelly. The original graphic art is by Coley Horner, and Southern Fried's original music is by Rob Harrison of Gamma Radio. Southern Fried's audio is edited and mixed by Ches Gray of Gray Multimedia. Don't forget to subscribe to the other show I narrate, Fetal Abduction, a true crime podcast. And I'd like to remind you to come join my Facebook group. We share memes and have a lot of laughs. It's a really fun community, and we'd love to have you. Hashtag no shit ass is allowed. If you enjoyed today's show, don't forget to subscribe and please tell a friend or rate and review on iTunes. I'm also on most large platforms like Stitcher and Spotify, as well as Stitcher Premium, where you can listen ad-free. If you have any case suggestions, please email southernfriedtruecrime@gmail.com. I do not accept case suggestions on social media private messages. But please feel free to reach out by email. Not only do I get my most interesting and little-known cases from listener suggestions, I love hearing from you guys. Until next time, thanks so much for listening. Wash your hands, stop touching your face, and y'all take care.